This is The Impromptu, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. And now, your hosts for today, Michael Norton, and me, Alex Knight. What the hell just happened to Nintendo?
I really wish I knew. So they were going to have this major press conference where they talk about what their plan is for mobile and such. And what we got was a Mi chat app.
So this is going to be, is it an iPhone only app?
They didn't really elaborate on that. They just said it was mobile. So I'm not actually sure. They did show off an iPhone. So I think it might be iPhone first, Android later. It's not what anyone was really expecting. I think people were expecting an actual game of some sort. Like me personally, I think what Nintendo really needed to do here was something like, hey everyone, coming out tomorrow, Mario Kart for Apple TV, mic drop. But that didn't happen. Instead, we got something a little different.
Do you think that it's because Nintendo had no intention of doing anything like that for the initial launch, or do you think that it's just something that they plan to do later? Like, basically, well, let's talk about what would be the reasons, if any, why you wouldn't launch a game like that on iOS.
I think one thing is that they're just starting out at this. They don't really know what they're doing, and they're relying heavily on Dana to kind of help them out. But I think ultimately one of the biggest problems is that while Nintendo is really good at making games, they're really bad at business. They're like, right now, they are business-wise, they're kind of like where BlackBerry is. It's like they've failed to anticipate their competition. They continually release hardware that's substandard and behind the times. And they rely on some kind of thing that their traditional fans love. With BlackBerry, it's the keyboard. With Nintendo, it's their first-party titles to kind of keep themselves going. Obviously, Nintendo is in a far better position than BlackBerry is. Nintendo actually has quite a sizable cash hoard at this point. They could continue operations for quite some time, even running a loss. They definitely need to turn things around. And next year is going to be especially important because the NX comes out, and I feel like that's pretty much their make or break. Because if that bombs, then they're done.
And you think it's that cut or dry, really?
I think so, yeah. The NX was basically Satoru Iwata's big vision for the future of Nintendo. And, I mean, obviously now he's gone, which is really sad, but that was like the big plan that Nintendo has come up with and that they've been working on for the past few years. So it's like, if that ends up being terrible, I don't know what other ideas they have left, because that was their big one. If it's bad, I don't know where they go from there. Mobile is really just a footnote compared to that. They do need to get into mobile. I think it's a really good idea for them to diversify, but ultimately it shouldn't try and replace their existing business. It should kind of act as a companion, per se. I mean, I would love to see something like Mario Kart on Apple TV or Android TV or whatever. But ultimately, I think they have to just do what's best for their brand and what's best for their console business. So, I mean, selling games specifically on mobile platforms might be less of a priority for them. Maybe it's more about offering companion services that tie into their consoles. During the call, they also announced their new cloud account system, Nintendo account. So moving forward, once this goes live, everyone is going to have a Nintendo account that replaces all of the existing services. Everything syncs across the cloud between all devices. All of your purchased games are tied to your Nintendo account and not to your Nintendo consoles, which is going to make a lot of people really happy. Because for the longest time, the party line from Nintendo has been, oh, we're sorry, that game you bought is tied to that console in particular. So because it got smashed to bits, you're going to have to buy the game again. Sorry. Which has pissed a lot of people off, as I'm sure you can imagine.
I can imagine it. But let's talk about the brand. What does this mean for Nintendo as a brand?
Well, as a brand, they're still pretty strong, like, just by themselves, maybe not, but the franchises they've created are huge. Mario, Zelda, Metroid to a lesser extent, Smash Brothers, Animal Crossing is pretty huge now, Splatoon is doing quite well, so that could take off and become a whole new franchise. Every franchise they've created has kind of become a cultural phenomenon, and that really can't be denied. Like, they have huge power there. And really, they have, more so than any other company, they have the power of nostalgia behind them. If the NX has something like an ultimate virtual console where you can play every previous Nintendo game ever for some kind of Netflix model, like, imagine that. They announce the NX, and beside it they say, oh, hey, guys, do you want to play every Nintendo game ever? Well, here, now you can for $10.99 a month.
You know, actually, that reminds me of PlayStation Now, because that's what I wanted PlayStation Now to be. I want to be able to pay for a service where I can play all of these games that, you know, I have fond memories of from, you know, PlayStation 1 to PlayStation 2 to PlayStation 3, but that hasn't happened yet for whatever technical reasons that are involved, or maybe it's a resource issue of porting. How do you get those? Because I don't know the technical details of the streaming, and how do you prepare a PlayStation 2 or a PlayStation 1 game even to work on that streaming type of service?
Essentially, the way it works is all of these games run on virtual consoles that are emulating the console, except for maybe the PS3 games. I think PlayStation Now is actually running on server racks that are using the PS3 CPU, or maybe the PS4 now. I don't know exactly what their hardware setup is, but basically all of the server blades are running various virtualization processes that are emulating consoles and then streaming the video output across the internet to your TV through the PS4. So there's quite a lot of dev work that needs to happen in order for that to work. Like, they basically have to re-engineer the consoles, PS1, PS2, PS3. They have to reverse engineer all of them to run through a virtual machine on top of a server, and then have it somehow run really smoothly and with enough bandwidth that they can pipe it to you. And I mean, Nintendo would probably run into the same problem, although with Nintendo, they do have an added benefit. The open source community has done a lot of legwork making Nintendo emulators over the years. There are really good GameCube and Game Boy Advance and DS emulators out there for pretty much every game. So if Nintendo were a little more forward-thinking, like, this is another big problem, I think. They're not particularly forward-thinking, but if they were, they would probably hire some of these developers that have been maintaining these emulators and use them to build a virtual console platform that would allow everybody to play every Nintendo game ever made, which would be amazing. But without that, I'm sure at least to some extent they've considered the idea. It's just not clear whether they'd be able to make it happen or not. I hope they can, because that would be really awesome, but I'm slightly pessimistic about it.
It's definitely not an easy technical thing to solve.
No.
You know, I applaud companies like Sony for at least trying in this space, because obviously Nintendo, it doesn't seem like they're anywhere near getting to that point where they can offer, a backlog of games on, as a streaming service. But I agree. I mean, that would be amazing if you could access all of your favorite Nintendo games from every console. I think it's a very idealized, I think, way of thinking, but I think it's possible. And you know, I mean, of course, anything is really possible with enough money and with enough resources. I don't know. I feel like confidence in what Nintendo is doing is just slowly eroding away. That's how I personally feel. And just by looking at the general observations that people seem to make, longtime Nintendo fans, I mean, much bigger fans than I am, that it just seems like it's sad, because it feels like the company is sort of like slipping through our fingers, and we want it back. We want Nintendo to be back in the glory days, but it's not happening. And it's like they keep getting further and further away. And I just feel like at some point they're just going to like disappear into the horizon and we won't see them again, which would be really sad.
Yeah, that is my big worry. Hopefully, if it comes to that, they will at least have the decency to sell their franchises to someone who can handle them. Because obviously we wouldn't want Mario and Zelda to disappear forever. That would be a huge waste. I would just hope they pick the right developer to continue that legacy. I kind of feel like if it really came down to it, they would probably just do what Sega did and ditch the console business and start just making games. Of course, the only problem with that is all of their devs are kind of geared for making games on Nintendo consoles. So, like, they kind of very much do the Apple thing where it's like, well, we build the hardware, so we also build the software, and it all just kind of works really well, which is why Nintendo games are always the most polished, because they do everything, so they just kind of build it seamlessly. But then they would have to shift gears to, okay, let's do PS4 development now, or let's do Xbox One development now. Although, since Nintendo is a Japanese company, I kind of feel like they would probably go PS4 only if it came to that, just from a solidarity sort of thing. Like, if they're going to bow out, they're probably going to give their stuff to Sony, I would think.
Yeah, I think it's way too early to talk doom and gloom yet, but I'm kind of with you though. If they do have a major flop for their console, which is still kind of their bread and butter, that console has to be successful.
Yeah,
because
they have no other option.
All of the investors, their stock will probably tank if it fails.
Well,
it already
went down quite a bit after that call that they did. Like, when they announced the mobile stuff, that was actually an investor call. They also announced that they would be delaying the apps until March of next year. So, like, that chat app comes out in March, and then the other games come out like throughout the rest of 2016 into 2017. So they're not exactly rushing things. And so after the call ended, Nintendo's stock went down about 8 to 10% just from that. If their next console bombs, it's not looking good for them.
What about the handheld market? Because they've got the DS, right? But
yeah,
now there are rumors that this next console is going to be sort of more of a evolution of what they attempted to do with the Wii, and have this kind of hybrid sort of almost tablet-like experience, kind of hybrid tablet / controller with physical controls on it. And I think we talked about that a little bit in the past.
Yeah.
About, you had some ideas about sort of the direction that they could go with a new console. And so I guess if they were to continue down that path, it would kind of make sense to discontinue the DS, because then if you had this device that could be sort of disconnected, that you've got this, you know,
yeah,
this headless device that just, you know, you can, you've got these accessories that effectively operate on their own, then you wouldn't need a DS. But I guess it all depends on how big it is too, right? Because some people like the portable size. The whole point of that portable console is that it's a reasonable size that you can put in a bag or a large enough jacket pocket if you're lucky.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do, especially if it is some kind of hybrid. I still feel like it definitely is some kind of hybrid. What I'm thinking it's going to look like is probably there's going to be this little Apple TV-like box that sits connected to the TV, and the controller is basically a new 3DS XL or something like it. Probably a bit more streamlined, probably still made out of plastic. There is talk that Nintendo's trying to amp up their graphics, so I think bare minimum it'll probably support Unreal Engine 4.
Well, it has to. There's no way they can go another generation with not doing that.
Yeah, at this point they can probably safely get some chips for a good deal and make a console that'll actually support Unreal 4 and possibly even Unreal Engine 5 when that shows up. Because we're getting towards the point where that's going to show up. Since they moved to more of an iterative model, we're actually on Unreal Engine 4.9 right now. So I'm actually not sure if they're doing like the whole major release thing at this point anymore, because it's like when it hits 5, I don't know that it'll be dramatically better than what it is now, because they've been pushing updates every so often. They've added new features. They've added crazy new rendering pipelines and lighting effects. And like 4.9, just in and of itself, they added all of this insane real-time global illumination stuff so that the sun would like dynamically light through pillars and stuff. So you would get like these real-time rays and shadows, and the particle effects would stream in through the light and everything. Like entire major features that would normally be reserved for the next major release. Like that kind of feature would totally have gone in Unreal Engine 5 before. But now that it's kind of this open source project, well, not really open source, but free to use. Now that it's like free to use and they constantly update it, it seems like they're just kind of rapidly innovating it no matter what. So, I mean, when it does get to 5, it'll probably just be another minor bump. But taking into consideration all the updates that have happened from 4.0 to 4.9, it's basically a totally different engine at this point. But I'm going off on a tangent again. Ultimately, I think the new hardware will definitely support Unreal, because it has to. Like at this point, the only chips on the market will be chips that can run those engines and run them well. So I don't see why they wouldn't.
I feel like they would get developer backlash, because we have these amazing, incredible story-driven games now. Cinematically, you're bound by your tool set, and
yeah,
we have these incredible game engines that exist, and I would imagine from a developer's perspective, there's no way in hell that you would ever want the platform to limit what you can't do, because that's at that point the platform is now dictating and influencing the outcome of what you're developing. It's hampering your artistic way of expressing how you want things to be. And, you know, and the technology has to be there. I can compare that to filmmaking. I mean, for example, like it's frustrating for a director who wants to capture something in a certain way and not have camera technology that is up to speed. Like, for example, Avatar. I remember famously when that came out, James Cameron was talking about when they started working on that, they had to literally build cameras that would do the 3D technology that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And now that's now kind of what everybody has adopted, but that somebody had to build it because he didn't want his creative vision to be hampered by this technology, right? So I just can't see developers ever making anything for Nintendo again if they're going to screw this next thing up.
Yeah, like Xbox One and PS4 have both moved to PC architecture. So building a game now is, in theory, basically building the PC version and then making slight tweaks to get it to work on the consoles, in theory. But as we've seen with games like Arkham Knight, it doesn't exactly go as planned. Yeah, I really don't know what happened with that. I think it's probably because they give the ports over to different studios. Like, I know the Arkham Knight PC port was being done by somebody else, so it probably all gets lost in the jumble. But I think in theory, as long as the same studio does all three, there should only be minor differences in the code to optimize it for each platform, in theory. It's always in theory. But it does make it easier for developers to build games. Nintendo, in building a new console that comes out next year, they have to take that into consideration. Like, if the NX isn't PC architecture, then they're shooting themselves in the face. With two major consoles supporting PC architecture, and then you don't, suddenly developers have to basically create a whole new version of the game just for you. And with budgets the way they are for games, that's not going to happen.
What are those little characters called? Me? Are they called me characters?
The avatars?
Avatar things. Right, okay. I don't understand the appeal of that. I've never understood it. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah, I've never really understood it either. It's kind of like the Xbox 360 avatars, they moved it over to Xbox One as well. Yeah, I really don't get the appeal of creating like this weird cartoonish version of yourself in sci-fi and in like, well, very real stuff happening now, like virtual reality is becoming a thing. So I think in terms of creating avatars, we would ideally want extremely realistic versions of ourselves. Technology is a limitation there, but with game graphics getting more and more intense, creating a somewhat photorealistic version of ourselves or an idealized photorealistic version of ourselves, as most people are likely to do, because who's going to make an avatar that looks exactly like them? Unless you're Brad Pitt, most people will do tweaks. It's inevitable.
Well, actually, now that you mentioned that, I actually was playing Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain, and I did create an avatar that looks eerily like me, but I haven't actually played the multiplayer component. But anyways, that's a bit of a tangent. Is there anything else regarding the Nintendo stuff that you want to talk about that's kind of bothering you? I feel like, I mean, we barely scratched the surface, but I guess what else is there to really say? Because this is like a wait and see thing.
Yeah,
we don't really know how this is going to turn out.
Like they've just kind of been very guarded about all of it. They're just
right.
Like, okay, we're working on this stuff. It's going to be good. Maybe like they haven't really given us anything to go on. So I think even though the apps are coming out starting in March, that's probably not the time to take stock of Nintendo's situation. The time to take stock of their situation is in June at E3 when they announce the NX. Once we see what that looks like and once we see what their overall platform vision is, then we'll be in a much better position to say, okay, Nintendo's finally got this, or, oh God, what have they done? This is terrible. They're going to become the next Sega.
I still want to be optimistic about this because, you know, I want Nintendo to succeed, and I'm really hoping that at least, you know, in the first half of 2016 that they do release some kind of significant enough contribution to the iOS platform as far as a game is concerned to really show people, hey, we actually have talent here that is able to produce something that is meaningful and that's actually good to play. And not only that, but to actually show the world that, hey, we actually understand the smartphone market. We understand this platform, and we, you know, this is something that, like, we're late to the market, but at least, like, we understand it and we have something now, and this is going to be a new thing that we at least experiment with.
Which would make sense, except they kind of hired another company to do it for them.
Now, what about the possibility of, at least for first-party games that Nintendo's actually making, what about companion apps for iOS that could have add extra functionality when you're playing a game? Let's say, I don't know, I'll just use Mario as an example. Let's say an iPhone app that does things like allow you to look at a world map or something while you're playing the game so you can see where you're going or something. I don't know. Maybe that's a poor example. But that type of stuff where, like, the dual screen functionality that you get on a PlayStation with Remote Play allow you to do things like that in certain games. And I just thought maybe a companion app on iOS to add extra functionality to a game would be kind of neat for some people.
Yeah. I mean, those devs have been plumbed already. Like with Microsoft, you had Xbox Smart Glass, which I felt was quite underutilized. Like, people would just kind of make apps that would just display information at you, which I think is totally the wrong use of the platform. I think if Nintendo does it, they'll actually take the right approach, which is the app needs to basically be an extension of the game. Like, probably the best Smart Glass app was Dead Rising 3, where you could actually see a map, see things on the map. There was a whole quest line that ran inside of the companion app that actually connected to the game, and you could call drone strikes on the zombies from the app. So, like, it intrinsically tied itself into the game and made itself useful. It wasn't just a walkthrough or a list of things. It actually did stuff and it actually mattered. And I think that's the approach that Nintendo will take if they decide that that's something that they want to do. Like there's so many different options. Like for Pokemon, your iPhone could become a Pokedex. For Zelda, it could become your inventory management screen. Like you're just like dragging the hookshot up to your slot and moving the potions around, that sort of thing. There's a lot of potential there. But they have to decide that they want to do it, to really do it justice.
I feel like if we keep talking about this, I'm just going to get more and more depressed. So maybe we can move on. But still, yes, on the topic of Nintendo, why don't we talk about the new account stuff? I haven't really looked at it in detail. It sounds like you maybe are a little bit more knowledgeable about what's going on with that.
They didn't give a lot of information, but they basically said, like, this is going to be your new unified account. It's going to tie to everything. It's going to do cloud sync with all of your devices. So they even mentioned game data. So they might be doing cloud saves, possibly. And they mentioned that the mobile, this is what makes me think they might be doing companion experiences. The mobile stuff will connect to the cloud and transfer data to the consoles and vice versa. So that does imply some kind of companion functionality, but they didn't really elaborate on it.
The single biggest complaint I've seen people have with the way Nintendo handle or doesn't handle account stuff is transitioning apps and games between devices, which is people, why, I don't understand, Michael, explain to me why in 2015 that this stuff isn't like in the cloud and all synced up. And like, if I buy a new device if I have to buy a new device because I've lost a device, I shouldn't have to call Nintendo to be able to access all of my purchases. Why isn't it like the Android or the iOS App Store? Why can't I see a purchase history and just tap a button that says download and suck all of that stuff back to my device?
As I mentioned earlier, that is actually something they're fixing with this new system. So purchase content from the eStore will actually load onto your Nintendo account. So there will be a purchase tab and you will be able to re-download games, which is like, it basically requires the infamous finally, in air quotes, with neon flashing lights. This is something that just needed to happen, and I'm really glad that it is happening, because I've bought so many things for my Wii U and for my 3DS, and to know in the back of my mind that I'm screwed, it's scary, because I've spent quite a bit of money. Like, most of the Wii U games I've bought digitally. There's a lot there that could get lost if they don't do something. So I'm really glad that they are. And hopefully the NX will actually support a lot of the existing content, that it'll be backwards compatible. Might be a little difficult if they move to PC architecture, just because there isn't really a good translation layer there between, because right now I think they're still running on PowerPC architecture. So it's like, they would have to build something like Rosetta, like what Apple did when they transitioned from PowerPC to Intel. They might be able to recompile it. It depends what their game engine is like. Well, game engines, rather. It might be somewhat easy, or it might be impossibly difficult. So we'll have to wait to see what they announce. But I'm hoping that we can still use a lot of the games that we've been playing.
You know, everyone's really hard on Nintendo for not getting this cloud stuff right, which is, I mean, well-deserved. It's totally true. And
codes. That's all I'm going to say.
Clearly Sony is way ahead, but they even Sony, if you look at how their platform works, they're still nowhere close to where they need to be. I mean, just look at the PSN store. It's a really bad experience. I mean, it's gotten better over the years, but it's terrible. Like, even on a mobile device, like, Sony doesn't even get mobile apps too, because if you download the PlayStation Companion app, if you want to buy a game, when you tap the PlayStation Store button, it kicks you out to a web view and loads the PSN store, which is horribly slow. And just like anything from like searching is slow.
It also doesn't work half the time.
Sometimes it just doesn't load properly. I don't know what the hell it's doing. So it's, you know, just, it seems like the console gaming industry doesn't, other than maybe Microsoft, because Microsoft seems to be ahead of the pack in terms of UI, which we talked about in episode 18 a little bit, about how the Xbox One user interface, it really does seem ahead. And I don't have an Xbox One, but I've seen it, and I know enough about how it works and how it looks. And, you know, I've spent a few minutes with it, but, yeah. I mean, even the new UI stuff that they're going to be rolling out, you know, with this new Windows 10 sort of unified code base where it's like, you can buy a game on one platform and, you know, run it on any device. So I don't understand what's going on with Nintendo or Sony. I don't know what the core problem is with these companies, that they can't get their act together with the whole cohesive user experience, user design stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard. It's not easy, but I mean, it's integral. This is crucial. You cannot get away with a shitty experience.
Yeah. I think it's just a matter of these things not really being their core competency. Like, Nintendo's core competency is making fun games. That's what they're best at. And sometimes coming up with really whimsical hardware stuff, like the Wii. The Wii was a watershed moment. Like, the whole idea of motion control for games was nuts. Like, people went crazy over it. Like, oh my god, I can like swing this thing, and it's like swinging a tennis racket. And I mean, it was really a seminal moment. There were people that were like, oh, this is a stupid gimmick. Oh, it's a fad. It sort of was a bit, but it has also led to the idea that to achieve truly immersive VR gaming, we need motion controllers.
Michael, the only thing we actually need is the Virtual Boy. Don't you know that?
Yeah. And the crippling migraines that come with it.
The Virtual Boy in tandem with the Power Glove. That's the world's perfect combination, right?
Yeah, and it's actually funny because that's kind of what's happening. Like, you've got the Oculus Rift, and then you have those controllers that they showed off, the weird sort of, like, handheld thing with the motion control ring around it that lets you basically reach out and grab things. It is pretty much a souped-up 2016 version of the Virtual Boy and a Power Glove, or two Power Gloves in the case of Oculus. They weren't that far off the mark, but obviously in the 80s, the technology just wasn't there to build the kind of experience that we're getting now. And obviously it'll continue to improve over time. It'll be like in Minority Report with those gloves that Tom Cruise puts on. It'll just be like this perfect, completely seamless tactile interaction layer. It could go full Ready Player One, and we basically like strap into haptic feedback suits that track our motion exactly.
Okay, now you're just talking absurd.
It could happen.
What was John Carmack's?
Oculus, yeah, he joined them.
Didn't they create the actual like moving platform where you can stand on and...
No, that was another company, but they sort of partnered with it
a little bit. Oh, right.
Yeah, people were playing around with like Oculus plus motion controllers plus moving treadmill. And it was like, yeah, you can like walk around this world and with the motion controllers actually grab things. Like the quintessential demo was using the, what were they called? I think they're called Sixth Sense controllers. And they used them to pick up a lightsaber from a rack and deflect blaster bolts from a test droid. Like that floating one that Luke used in episode 4. It seems kind of dorky, but I just know that when I get to play something like that, I'm just going to lose it. Like, I'll just be like, oh my god, I'm in the game now. The game is like reality at this point.
From what I've heard from people who have tried Oculus and, of course, Sony's offering now, which is it's changed names now. I think it's just called Sony VR or something like that,
it's
right?
PlayStation VR.
PlayStation VR, yeah. Okay. You know, it's one of those things where it seems like... How do you describe to somebody what the VR experience was? Now, from what I've heard from people who have actually tried Oculus, they said it was a fairly transformative experience. So that gives me a lot of hope that we finally have arrived at a point where the technology is now acceptable or at least good enough to where we can actually have a fairly immersive experience. Because all the stuff that we tried to do before with like stereoscopic 3D and that low resolution, just it wasn't there. right? So I feel like the next big thing for VR, I think where it really needs to be is we need the VR tech to get to the point where they can have like 4K resolution or even 5K.
It's nearly there. The commercial version of Oculus is going to have like, I think it's QHD. Like it's kind of halfway between 1080p and 4K, 2K.
Now, is that in each eye or is that total? Because the current Oculus, I think, is 1080p in each eye,
right? I think it's in each eye.
That must take a lot of processing power.
Well, the thing is, they're doing width, but they're not doing as much height.
Oh, okay. So it's really not quite...
They've basically designed the screens in a way that it just kind of perfectly covers your eyes. And obviously, when you tilt your head, it's moving the camera, so it gives you the illusion of this infinite view. But really, it's just these two screens that are like right in front of your eyes. So, I mean, they don't have to be huge. They just need to be dense. And the commercial version is fairly dense. So it should be relatively seamless, along with the frame rate that they're trying to achieve, which I think is 120 minimum.
That seems like a pretty good bar to reach for.
I think like the absolute rock bottom is 60. Like, it has to run at 60 for it to be truly seamless. Like 30, you'll just be like, what is this? Am I in a soap opera?
It'll be a slideshow. It won't work for fast-paced movement.
It's basically the uncanny valley for VR. The frame rate needs to be completely seamless, and there can't be any lag when you're moving your head around. Like if you move the camera, if there's any lag or like juddery motion.
Yeah, I mean, that'll break
that
the illusion completely. Yeah.
I don't think the initial games are going to be these huge graphical powerhouses, because I think it needs to optimize for the best seamless experience. But they definitely are pushing some really cool stuff, like Eve Valkyrie, for example. Like, I've tried Oculus a few times, but nothing with crazy graphics. Eve Valkyrie does have crazy graphics, and I've read some hands-on experiences of it, and people have just been completely blown away. It's a starfighter sim. It's kind of Battlestar Galactica-ish. So, like, the start of the game, you're in this launch tube, and the fighter goes out the launch tube just like the Vipers, and then you're piloting this ship, and you can look around, and you've got the controls in front of you, and you're, like, steering the ship, blowing up bad guys, so... And people have just been like, whoa, because obviously it's like next gen graphics combined with VR and apparently a really good frame rate. And it's just become this transformative experience for people. Anyone that's tried it has basically said, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
So what else is going on? So we talked about Nintendo and how they're kind of in a sad state at this point, and a little bit about VR, but there's not much more to say about that. It's kind of a wait and see.
I guess as a counterpoint, the new Apple TV is out.
Michael has his shiny new Apple TV. Ooh. Is it everything you wanted and more, Michael?
I don't know. I haven't
actually plugged it in, have you?
Yet. No. I did try it in the store for a bit, and it looked pretty cool. The exciting thing about it is it now has apps, and a huge category of those apps are games, and it has controller support. So the new Apple TV is, for all intents and purposes, part game console, which is pretty exciting. It's more or less an iPhone 6, and the A8 chip, we think, has been overclocked compared to the iPhone 6, so it's running faster, so it should theoretically have better game performance when you're running it with Metal, or even without Metal, in theory. I'm not actually sure if the current tvOS seed actually has Metal. I know you noted when you were in the store, you were trying to play Asphalt, and you noticed that the frame rate dipped quite a bit.
Well, it actually looked like a scaled-up iPhone app. It didn't look like, you know, something that you would want to have on a big screen. It looked almost as if, like, somebody had been airplaying the game from their iPhone. I haven't read the documentation on how to build a game for Apple TV, but I'm thinking maybe just the next version of Asphalt will be optimized for the Apple TV, because, you know, version 8, which is the current game, has been out for a while on iOS. You know, I just feel like this was just like a rush to get something on there so that they could actually have something to demo to people.
Devs have kind of had, how much time have they had? When did they announce the TV? They announced it in September, the start of September. So I think devs have had basically a month. In theory, tvOS is basically the same as iOS, but there might be a few caveats there. Obviously, one big thing with the games, and this is maybe something that's causing it to hurt a little, is the app size limitation stuff. So every app that gets installed on the Apple TV has a maximum size of 250 megabytes. Past that, you can add tags for asset bundles that get loaded after the fact. So for example, if you have a game with multiple levels that's linear, you can say, okay, here's this 250 megabyte app. Once you open it, start loading level one and two. You play through level one, it goes, okay, you finish level one, start preloading level three. You get to level two, it starts loading level four, and so on. And as you progress, it starts deleting previous levels.
Okay, that seems really intelligent, but that still worries me, though, because Asphalt 8 on iPhone, I think, maybe I'm thinking of a different racing game, but those games are big. Like, they are, like, I'm talking between 1.5 and 2 gigabyte downloads.
Yeah.
Now, maybe it's downloading some assets that the device doesn't need all of those. Like, it doesn't need assets for, like, on an iPhone at least, I don't need on an iPhone 6 all of the, you know, image assets from every previous iPhone device. Like, it should only be downloading the ones that are from my phone. And I think that's part of what app thinning is, right?
Too. Yeah. So
it's like download only what you need.
Yeah. The Apple TV uses app thinning extensively. It's part of this entire system. And it sounds like it's kind of intelligent, but developers actually have to do a lot of work to kind of build it into their app. And game developers have already said that this is kind of a nightmare because, as you pointed out, games have a lot of assets and they're not usually linear. It's usually like, okay, we have this level, which is made up of these props, and these props also show up in this level and that level. So we have like all of these things, and then we reuse this car here, here, and here. And like, it's very difficult to kind of bundle game assets into these neat little blocks. So Apple's essentially asking game developers to completely rethink how they develop games in order to support Apple TV.
No, I understand that, but how would that even work for an open world game?
It wouldn't. That's the problem. It would not work at all.
So this is going to this is really going to severely limit what...
Yes.
So basically, console makers have nothing to worry about at this point.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we'd never see something like Arkham Knight on Apple TV. That even if the GPU could handle it with those file size and app size limitations, you can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do it. If they did a pared down game where it's like level after level, totally. You could totally do that. There's also another limitation where the maximum amount, like they give you an allotment of storage on iCloud to store additional assets for the app up to 20 gigs, which is probably fine. Obviously, you're not going to be able to build an Arkham Knight or an Assassin's Creed because they're like 40, 50, 60 gigs. But you could build a somewhat larger game in theory. The only problem is it has to adhere to this asset management system. It definitely precludes a lot of different types of games. So a lot of people are kind of hopeful that Apple will relax these restrictions as time goes on and as the hardware improves. Like, I'm hoping like Apple TV year two, faster processor, possibly more storage, and then they're like, okay, we get it. We're going to remove this limitation. They don't do this on iPhone or iPad, and those are both 32 and 64 gigs. So I'm not sure exactly why they're doing it on Apple TV, because Apple TV starts with much more space than the base iPhone even, and they don't do asset management to this scale on the iPhone 16 gig, so it's kind of odd.
There is no 16 gig Apple TV, is there?
No, it starts at 32. So there's that much more space. In theory, it's like, well, why do they care if an app is like 3 gigs? The only apps that are going to be that big are games anyway. So it's not clear exactly what their motivation is here. Like, it's totally understandable to provide it as an option, but to enforce it as you must build games this way is a little backwards and draconian. also on top of that is the fact that all games have to support the Siri remote. Controllers are optional. So
something like an MFI controller would actually work?
Oh, yeah. They actually sell a new SteelSeries controller called the Nimbus that's designed to work with Apple TV. It even has a Siri button, which is cool. But it's totally optional. So even if a developer was like, okay, I want to make a game and I want to use like a full controller and have like camera movement and all this other stuff, you can't do that because you have to support the Siri remote to start with. And all you have on that is a trackpad, click the trackpad, and Wii-style gyroscope control.
So speaking of trackpad, why is it that you think Apple didn't make at least an optional controller that was that had the gyroscope in it, but without the actual buttons? Like, why didn't they make basically just a slab that you could hold in your hands that was a giant trackpad that with a gyroscope? Because that seems like something that would be cool. That would kind of be a little more innovative. In that, at least they're acknowledging, yes, you know, for games you want a controller, but you need something physical to be able to touch.
I think ultimately they kind of wanted to stick with the idea of a remote, like it's a TV, so TV has a remote. They kind of wanted to, like, it's,
but
kind
it's still
of a
kind
skeuomorphic
of a,
thing.
Well, it's weird because it seems like a compromise, and I didn't think Apple would be willing to make that type of a compromise for video games, because clearly most people still play video games with a controller. So to take this device that you hold in your hand that is designed, that traditionally was designed for one purpose, which is to control your TV, and now, of course, now the remotes are used as, they're more complicated input devices, and you can, you know, some of them have full keyboards on it that you can, you know, type your password in, for example. Or use it to chat with people, but it seems like a strange compromise to me. So it almost makes me think that, like, I don't even know what Apple's stance is on video games, because this just feels like they're testing the waters, but they don't really know how to do it.
That's usually what it is for them. Like, gaming has always sort of been treated as an afterthought for Apple. They don't really cater to it per se. Like with this asset thing, they weren't really thinking about, oh wait, game developers don't build app games this way. Like, it just shows that they're not really thinking about games, even as they say, oh yeah, you can play games, it's awesome. They're not really thinking about it. They tend to sort of just treat it as a marketing soundbite, like, oh hey, you can play these fun little games, but also there's all this other stuff that's more important. They treat it as like checking a box, sort of. I'm hopeful that moving forward, they will start to see that, hey, this can be a game console. We should really start supporting this use case. And what makes me hopeful for that is that the Nimbus controller that I mentioned, it was actually co-developed with Apple. It's the unofficial Apple TV controller. So I have to feel like at some point they'll say, you know what? We noticed that people really love playing games, and they especially love playing games on Apple TV with the controller. So, you know what? We're just going to lift that optional restriction. You can make games for controller only, and we're going to offer an Apple-branded controller that's just like the Nimbus or something. I can see that happening within a year, probably.
When they look at the existing market, like what Nintendo has, what Sony has, what Microsoft has with the Xbox, is your sense that they're coming from a more arrogant sort of angle, that, like, we think this is how video games really should be played? Or do you think that they look at these consoles from the perspective of, okay, well, clearly this market is still really strong, and they know, these guys know what they're doing, but we're going to still do something a little different?
I think ultimately they take more of a Nintendo approach to it, where it's like, okay, there's this entire market of people that aren't really being serviced by the game industry. We always talk about casual gaming. It really is a huge market, and Sony and Microsoft don't really cater to it at all. So Nintendo tries to. Most of their first-party titles aren't casual games. I would say maybe the only one that is maybe Animal Crossing. but that's a bit of a stretch. Otherwise, it's pretty much like heavy-duty platforming, puzzle-solving, monster-slaying adventure. Apple's really the only one through no fault of their own. Like, they didn't try to make this happen. It just kind of happened because they made a platform that everybody wanted to use. iOS is kind of this haven for all these beautiful little indie games that are totally casual, and people eat it up. Like, App Store revenue is probably in a large part due to game sales. Like, Flappy Bird, Angry Birds, Crossy Road, like, all of these drive a considerable chunk of App Store revenue, I would imagine. And, like, Apple really did nothing to encourage this at all. They just kind of stumbled into it. For the most part, they don't seem to know what they have, per se. Like, they kind of help it along a little bit. Like, iOS 9 added a ton of frameworks for games, like Replay Kit and a bunch of other stuff. Like, they've made it easier to develop games on iOS, which is great. But when it comes to the marketing side of things and the UX side of things and certain decisions they've made about the software development kit, they kind of continually show, like, they don't really understand games on their platform, per se. That hasn't really changed this entire time. Like, they're just kind of... I don't know whether it's intentional or accidental. They just seem to be a little oblivious to how huge gaming really is on iOS. And I'm hoping that with Apple TV, it kind of forces it out into the open, because people are finally going to be like, well, hey, this is plugged into my TV and it's kind of like a game console, and because I can install games on it and it has a controller. Can this be more like a console, maybe? Like, they're going to start getting that feedback just because it's more similar to consoles than it is to your iPhone.
It's interesting. I'm very excited for the next 6 to 12 months about with respect to at least how it's going to change the landscape or not change the landscape. But it definitely seems like this new Apple TV has really piqued the interest of the general public. And I say that because, like, just visiting the Apple store, there were quite a few people who were huddled around some of the demos, and it wasn't just like young tech nerds. It was people of all ages. You know, I saw an older couple, that were really interested in asking a lot of questions about what does this do other than watching TV, and like what they wanted to know, like, what kind of channels can I get on it, and what does it do that other things don't, you know, other typical streaming devices do. So that's an interesting sign, I think. Now, granted, I mean, this was just one Apple store that I visited, so that's not a good representation, obviously, about how a lot of people feel. But it seems like at least like this is it's an interesting product, and there's still it's still early days for them. So it remains to be seen how this is all going to play out. But you know, it's also one of those things where, you know, with the Apple TV, famously for years, they referred to it as a hobby. And I haven't heard them utter those exact words anymore, but I can't help but feel that they still feel that way about this, that it does still seem like a hobby to me, though, because everything that the new Apple TV is doing with apps and sort of from my perspective, the sort of half-hearted attempt at gaming, just because they kind of want to be in that space too. I just feel like, you know, it still feels like they're just toying with things to see. And this isn't to say that this is a bad thing. So I want to be clear that isn't a bad thing, but this is obviously, like, these are new waters. They're testing, they're playing, they're seeing what works, they're seeing what doesn't work. So maybe in the next one or two generations of Apple TV that come after this, we're going to see something fairly transformative.
I think it's kind of a new beginning for Apple TV. It's like, okay, we've kind of been dithering around for the past few versions. It's just kind of this box that sits there. It doesn't really do a lot. And at the same time, I think they've been wanting to do apps on it for a while, just because obviously putting apps on any of their devices is huge, particularly iOS-powered devices.
Just a quick note here. There's somebody in the channel here. Let me just see if I got the username right. JT underscore Van in the chat room saying, not an Apple fan, but I'm excited about the Apple TV. So that says something.
Yeah, definitely.
So Michael, why don't you take us out?
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.